Welcome back. Session 3 on Dreams, a way to listen to God. I realize I'm going to have to go a little faster in this Old Testament review because there's a lot of stuff to cover here. So let's get to it. Here's the next verse, next chapter, next statement about dreams. Now this is a statement of Moses. God is speaking to him, or through Moses. God is speaking. He says, "Listen to my words. When there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams." In other words, this is God saying, this is how, you want to know how I'm going to communicate with you? Well, it's a prophet. I'm going to put prophets among you, people who are going to speak before you my truth, and I'm going to reveal myself to them. How? In visions. I'm going to speak to them in dreams. The next passage. Long background to Gideon here. Gideon is one of my favorite people in scriptures. He was during the time of the judges, and he was a coward. At that time, the Midianites would raid Israel during the harvest every year, and so they would take any crops that they found and take it away with them. And so Gideon, when we're introduced to him, is hiding in a wine press, a huge vat where grapes would be trampled out, but he's trying to get wheat and chaff separated. Now, normally, you would do that on a hill in Israel where the wind was blowing, and you'd grind up on stones or grind in some way the wheat and chaff, and then you'd toss it up in the air, and the chaff would be blown away by the wind that would hit a hilltop. But Gideon can't do this, right? He can't do it, because if the Midianites see the floating chaff, they'll say, that's a person we got to attack. So he's hiding in a wine press, and he's trying to get this done. And angel appears to him and says, "Hail, mighty warrior." He's not a mighty warrior. God's going to make him one, but he doesn't know that yet. And he's given the direction to go and attack the Midianites. Well, if you remember the story, you should read it. You know, he tries to get out of it. He does this whole thing with the fleece and saying, "God, if you really want me to attack, make the fleece wet. And if you really want me to attack, make the fleece dry." He already knew God wanted them to attack. And then God says, as the battle is about to be engaged, he said, "If you're still afraid, take your servant Pura and go down to the Midianite camp." So he goes down, he's still afraid. He goes down with Pura to the Midianite camp, and he arrives at just the right tent, at just the right moment, when they're talking about these dreams. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. "I had a dream," he was saying. "A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed." His friend responded, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, sword of son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." And when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed down and worshiped. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up! The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." And so he's got 300 people, right? They break their pots, and they show their torches, and the camp starts, Midianites start attacking each other, and it's a huge victory. Fascinating. God was giving a message to Gideon that would give him courage, and he gave a dream to a Midianite and an interpretation to the Midianite, another Midianite. Amazing, right? Amazing. This statement that God spoke to Gideon through a dream that wasn't his. And it was just a dream that he heard about and would interpret. So, let's go on. Samuel. Now, I'm putting this under, this is more of the vision kind of experience, but I'm putting this under dreams for now. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out. Samuel was lying down in the house of the Lord where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." But Eli said, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." So he went back and lay down. Again the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." "My son," Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." Now Samuel did not know the Lord. Did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not been revealed to him. A third time the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down, and if he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." Now, I put this under the dream class. It's really a vision that he actually sees God in some way. And we don't understand that totally. But he's given a prophecy to say to Eli, the priest. And so it's done that way. So that's another way that God has spoken in the night. In the night. And making his will known and his plan known for the future. This one, you know, notice this is in 1 Samuel. Saul is about to die. He's about to fight the Philistines, and he knows things aren't going well, and so he gets the witch of Endor to call up Samuel. And that's an amazing passage anyway, that somebody who's dead is called up to a living presence. And Samuel said to Saul, the ghost Samuel, if you will, the dead Samuel says, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? I am in great distress," Saul said. "The Philistines are fighting against me, and God has departed from me. He no longer answers me, either by prophets or by dreams. So I have called on you to tell me what to do." I included this one there just because this was the normal expectation in the Old Testament, that God would speak, how? Through dreams. Through dreams. Why do we just think dreams are nothing, right? Let's go on. Now, this is a lengthy passage. And the setting is this: Solomon has become king, and God appears to him in a dream. Look at this. "At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream. And God said, 'Ask for whatever you want me to give you.' And Solomon answered, 'You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I'm only a little child. I do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?' And the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, 'Since you have asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I'll give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I'll give you a long life.' Then Solomon awoke, and he realized it had been a dream. He returned to Jerusalem, stood before the Lord's covenant and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, then gave a feast for all his court." Now, that's an interesting passage, isn't it? This is where the great passage where Solomon asks for wisdom, and God grants his request. And the very next chapter talks about how he applied that wisdom in deciding between the two women, the two prostitutes, who were debating the one live son. And Solomon demonstrates the wisdom in how he decides that issue. Now, what would have happened if Solomon had just said, "Wow, that was weird. You know, I must have stayed up too late. I shouldn't have had that drink just before I went to bed. Shouldn't have had that Benadryl. You know, my wife, when she takes Benadryl when she has a cold, will have wild dreams." What if Solomon had said, "Wow, what a wild dream"? But instead, he walked forward with great confidence in the calling that God had had on his life. All because of a dream. Now, let's look at the next passage, which is also a Solomon passage. Solomon proceeds to build the temple. And when Solomon finished building the temple, the Lord of the Lord and the royal palace and had achieved all he had desired to do, the Lord appeared to him a second time, as he had appeared to him at Gibeon, which you remember was a dream. The Lord said to him, I heard the prayer and plea which you have made before me. I have consecrated this temple which you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there. As for you, if you walk before me faithfully with integrity of heart and uprightness, as David your father did, and do all I command, observe my decrees and laws, etc. And then it talks about him being restored in a variety of ways. Given the long life and the promises of blessing once again. So, again, you know, Solomon's able to go forward with his life and his commitment and his role in the ministry of God, and he gets that confidence because of a dream, a dream. Now, there are many other places in the New, in the Old Testament. I just put the prophets down there. You know, Zechariah, Jeremiah with the Alma tree view and how he speaks to God's people as a result of that. He's given a message for God's people. Amos, who sees this guy measuring the walls of Jerusalem with a plumb line to see if they are if they're perfectly level, and they're not, and so there's something wrong in the kingdom, and he's given a message to the people. Habakkuk, Daniel, how can you understand Daniel without the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar? Remember, Daniel a couple of times interprets the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar, and it's fascinating because Nebuchadnezzar, a pagan king, is given a dream about the future. You remember the statue and the four kingdoms that are going to come, and how they're gradually going to become less pure and less valuable and more cruel. And that message about the future is given to a pagan king. Daniel interprets it. Daniel writes it down, and it becomes something that affirms our faith, that God has history under his control, and it all happened because of a dream. Now, that pretty much ends the reflection, except for one more verse from the prophets. And this is a very important one. Through Joel, there's going to be a day of the Lord, a time of judgment. But then the promise comes, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your young son, your sons and your daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. In other words, people are going to be able to be right straight in touch with what God wants to communicate them. How? Well, through dreams, through visions. And as an old man now, I'd say, oh, yeah, thank you. I'm appreciative of seeing dreams in my sleep. So next time, we're going to start looking at the New Testament. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, that's just all Old Testament stuff. But the reality is, the New Testament can't be understood without understanding dreams as well. And so, see you next time.